A muddled path ahead for health care in Florida after lawmakers vote down expanded coverage for the state's uninsured. We'll take your calls just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend. Start your work week with us, always live at 9, and now catch the daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, we'll tell you what the no vote on Medicaid expansion in Florida means for the uninsured around the state. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you about the push to clean up Jacksonville's toxic sites as we speak with the new CEO of Groundwork Jax. Also, Hurricane Preparedness Month and season is underway. Mercedes Lewis will call into the show later with more about his free football camp. And Culpepper on the first Triple Crown winner since the Carter administration. A very busy hour ahead. But first, this morning, reaction still coming in around the state after the Florida House on Friday voted down an expansion of Medicaid. Lawmakers were called back into special session this month to try to come to an agreement on health care spending. This after their regular session melted down 3 days early when the two chambers, the State House and Senate, could not come to agreement. The Florida Coastal School of Law's Disability and Public Benefits Clinic has several clients who will be affected by the no vote on Medicaid expansion. Clinic Director Sarah Sullivan is here now in studio, along with law student Jenny Rose, who is uninsured. Ladies, it's good to have you both on the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we'll take your calls on the no vote on Medicaid expansion in just a moment at 549-2937. If feedback online goes to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. All right. So tell us a little bit, Sarah, about the Disability and Public Benefits Clinic and your reaction to this no vote.
Sure. Well, our clinic represents disabled individuals and their caregivers. And we generally represent individuals who are experiencing barriers to access to benefits such as health care. And we see them when programs such as Medicaid aren't working and they're not working with other programs such as Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security. And we see a lot of uninsured or underinsured individuals. And what we generally try to do is we're problem solvers in the clinic. We try to look for the safety net services and refer them to those agencies. So when this no vote came down, we were actually hoping for some of those Medicaid expansion dollars to flow in because that would mean that a lot of the uninsured Floridians would then be insured. Also, that is affecting the low-income pool money, which is coming in because the low-income pool money funds those safety net services that we refer a lot of our clients to. So it really is kind of a dire situation, and it's one of those situations that is going to be recurring again and again and again.
Jenny Rose, you're uninsured. You're studying for the bar right now. What's your reaction?
I was very disappointed. I have a large family. I have 4 children, 3 adults, and 1 6-year-old. And my husband suffers from congestive heart failure. So this affects us in a very bad way.
What will you do now as you seek health care coverage? What's your plan?
Well, right now we call and negotiate with our doctor. We go pay for the actual office visit, which can run $75 to $100. Then we have to cover for the meds. And if we need blood work, it's a big problem for us because those are all individually separate bills. And we try to get generics when we can, but the blood work is the biggest problem because they test each individual one. So because my husband has to get his cholesterol checked, he's got to get an echocardiogram. He's got to take he recently had a pacemaker put in. So it's very costly for us. And because we have share of cost, we'd have to hit a minimum every month before they'd cover anything in excess for us. And with 3 adult children, my boys are 21, so they're well off the grid. But my other daughter just turned 18, and she has asthma. My 6-year-old has asthma. My 21-year-old oldest son suffers from a hearing loss, so we are concerned about getting hearing aids for him.
the whole family being impacted. And we'll go to your calls on Medicaid expansion in Florida in a moment at 549-2937. Sarah Sullivan, House Republicans voted down this measure, saying they see this whole matter as an example of federal overreach and that expanding Medicaid in the state is simply too expensive. According to the Census Bureau, latest figures show that 4.8 million Floridians, 24% of the state's population, are uninsured. That compares with 15% nationally. So what about these two opposing arguments? There are millions of uninsured in the state. Lawmakers in the House are saying while they appreciate that, they just don't think the state can afford to expand coverage.
Well, it's interesting that they say that because currently with Medicaid, the federal government already pays 60% of the Medicaid, the current Medicaid budget. And with expansion, depending on the year, it pays anywhere from 100% of that expansion down to 90%. And it also pays for a certain percentage of the administrative costs. So I understand that the argument is that it's going to be too expensive, but the federal government has taken that into account.
Dave on the north side. Dave, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm just curious as to why the House is so adamantly opposed to expanding Medicaid when it's going to be paid for by the federal government. It just seems as though the state is just acting petulant because a Democrat president came up with the idea of providing health care, and even though it's a Republican plan, they actually put it into practice, whereas all the Republicans have done has just been talk about, well, really nothing in terms of health care.
Thanks, Dave. And here's a quote from Representative Doug Bronson, a Republican in the Panhandle, saying that the House voted this down by saying, "This is something we cannot afford, not only in Florida, but the rest of the nation. If we have government-controlled health care," he said, "history tells us that anything the government is involved in tends to expand. I'm very concerned that we could spend all our gross national product on health care." Jenny Rose, your thoughts. Because the House Republicans are squarely against this. The House Senate, the state Senate, has a plan to expand Medicaid, but the House voted that plan down. So there's a schism between these two chambers, both of whom are controlled by Republicans, we might add.
I understand that. And I think they need to consider the people that they're totally disregarding. It's about the people and what the people need. And if you do not cover the people, they're going to get sicker. You're going to have people who are going to the emergency room when it could have been prevented if they expanded the Medicaid. And it's more of a, you know, you're going to have a huge bloody gash rather than just sit there and put a little Band-Aid on things that could have been taken care of earlier.
And I should point out that Jen Rose's family, they're working individuals, and that's something that I think gets missed, is that a lot of these uninsured people are working, and they're the working poor or the working lower middle class that are uninsured.
And when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, does your family can you afford a plan under the exchange, the federal exchange?
No, we can't. We just don't make enough money, but we don't qualify for straight Medicaid.
You fall into that so-called donut hole, that in-between space.
Correct.
Yeah. Tom on the west side. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, as Don Henley rather cynically suggested, we get the government we deserve. With so few people turning out for the last election, we don't get much. The thing that I think is the most obvious, though, is no one's mentioned, is all the problems and controversy with Obamacare just point out how much better off we would have been had Hillary Care passed.
Thanks, Tom. Lots of feedback coming in on social media. Meanwhile, Carolyn tweets the show, "This is a travesty. The insured will be hurt also because large uninsured populations create pricing issues." Sarah Sullivan.
Yes. A lot of the feedback from the vote is that once the uninsured, when they continue to be uninsured, that means that they're going to be going to the emergency room a lot. It's going to, for private hospitals, that means that there's going to be a rise in costs. That's going to mean a rise in premiums for those that are insured. So it's going to cost one way or another. So the fact, the argument that it's going to cost the government more, it actually is going to end up costing more with the uninsured population ultimately.
And so how do you see this special session coming to a close in a couple of weeks? Because the House and the Senate have to pass a budget and they have to figure out a solution to this one way or the other.
Well, it's my understanding that over the weekend they were negotiating this issue of the low income pool funding because it, the federal government has put a deadline at the end of June for the current funding, that they're going to go ahead and make up the funding loss from the federal government. But how that's going to be allocated to our safety net hospitals, especially the ones here in Jacksonville, is still up in the air.
Still up in the air. Amy writes on our Facebook page, Florida is turning down a chance to improve care for the working poor and increasing cost of care for the rest of us. Jacksonville runs the risk of losing its only Trauma One hospital at UF Health. Shameful, she writes. Let's go to Mark on the south side quickly. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. I'd just like to point out, you know, I appreciate the anecdotal stories about sick people in Florida, but I just want to point out the same thing that I tell John Morgan and his group when they talk about the medical marijuana. Nothing's going to change until we get different legislatures in the House of Representatives in the state of Florida. You keep arguing with people that are not coming to your argument rationally, and I don't understand how you can argue with people that aren't rational.
Thank you for that, Mark. A similar comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Laura, my thought is we need to get out and vote, encourage others to vote, be mindful of who we vote for. So wherever you stand on this issue, obviously people should make their voices heard at the polls, however you feel about it. Jenny Rose, your final thoughts.
I just hope that people understand that it's not a Republican-Democrat problem. It's a people problem. And we all should be concerned about the health of our fellow humans.
Well, we thank you both for joining us on short notice to react to this vote. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined by Sarah Sullivan, attorney and director of Florida Coastal School of Law's Disability and Public Benefits Clinic, and law student Jenny Rose sharing her personal story. A very quick break, and the show continues. Keep listening. Welcome back. Well, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, just awarded the city of Jacksonville $400,000 in federal money to study sites polluted by hazardous materials or oil and also develop a long-term cleanup plan for a big chunk of the city's urban core. The sites that will be assessed are north and west of the St. Johns River. At the same time, the new nonprofit Groundwork Jacksonville is literally on the ground working to eliminate brownfields, toxic sites, and polluted water from key neighborhoods. Groundwork Jack's CEO Don Emmerich joins us now with more about these cleanup efforts. Good morning.
Good morning.
And so Groundwork's off and running. You're the new CEO. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, what was your reaction to this federal money coming to Jacksonville to clean up some of these toxic sites?
You know, it's just another win for our community. There's a lot of really great momentum that's occurring in city, but specifically around, you know, the two neighborhoods that are the most contaminated neighborhoods in the city, and that is Springfield and the East Side. So this could not have come at a better time. You know, Groundwork Jacksonville, certainly it's taken 18 months for us to get where we are. We've only been full-time up and running since February. And so it's just this really great momentum. You have the DIA that certainly passed their CRA, which includes part of those contaminated communities. So you have that great local investment and buy-in. And then FSCJ just was rewarded their brownfield workforce grant, which is incredible. Then you have this, and then you have Groundwork. Now we all have to get together and have a very focused plan and not you know, take this throwing brochures out of a helicopter approach.
That's right. I'll not work in silos, but work in concert.
Correct.
The number to join the show as we talk about massive cleanup efforts of toxic sites around Jacksonville, the number is 549-2937. And so as we look at the history of these brownfield sites, there's a lot to discuss as to how we got to this point, Dawn, isn't there?
There really is. You know, we Springfield and Eastside have somewhat been, it's been the dumping ground for years. And so now we finally have some focused efforts and some stewardship and some teeth behind it that we can now actually, you know, really put some investment in and clean up these neighborhoods and get them back to the thriving communities that they once were. I think that the other big, this is a, and I don't want to speak on behalf of the city, I'm not their spokesperson, but what I can say, I've been being in this environment and being in the community for over 24 years, the brownfield redevelopment has been, has not been at full capacity that it should be. We, you know, we watch these cities like Atlanta, you know, I would look at Atlanta. Atlanta for 15 years leveraged their EPA brownfield funding that they were able to get that community. And over 15 years, because of that investment, they were able to have $40 billion of private redevelopment as a result of that investment of the EPA dollars. So we have a long way to go, but this is a real big win for our city.
And not only that, you're on a roll in terms of Groundworks getting points on the board right off the bat. You held a two-day session last week to discuss the proposed S-Line rail trail between historic Springfield and the East Side. That's an abandoned stretch of railroad about 5 miles long. You're partnering with the American Society of Landscape Architecture to shape a new vision for this. That's one example of what you're doing.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that we just got started in February.
And
that's exactly what we wanted to do. You know, we have to be very strategic again. We do not want to mission creep. There's a lot of people that have a lot of expectations for us. And so we have to stay focused. The contamination took a long time to get contaminated. It's going to take a long time for us to clean. But this, so we wanted to look at the, what are the easy wins? What are some of those assets that are already there that were built on contaminated land that we can, again, put some more focus on, leverage our resources, leverage our stewardship, work with the City of Jacksonville and ASLA and the National Park Service and Rails to Trails Conservancy, bring all those folks together and let's get this thing back and running. These neighborhoods have tremendous assets. They're just, they've been neglected. And so we are more than happy to take that role.
549-2937, so you can connect with Groundwork Jacksonville CEO Dawn Emmerich. Valerie is at the beaches. Hi, Valerie. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about what cleanup entails. I've heard that they actually take 2 feet of soil and cart it off to some soil graveyard in Kentucky or something, and then bring in brand new soil from somewhere. And I'm wondering if there's any phytoremediation or micro-remediation, you know, using plants or fungi, that might be more helpful, you know, because we know there's no way anymore. So that's my question.
Yeah. Thanks, Valerie. How does this cleanup commence?
Oh, goodness. I wish that I could be the expert in that. I'm not. I was more of an expert of your previous guest. So I will say that we are, you know, this particular grant that the city just got, it is not cleanup yet. This is an assessment grant that is hoping to create an inventory, assess, and then conduct the planning through community engagement to determine how to clean it up. And then what to do with it. I'm not an expert in the cleanup piece. There are lots of methodologies depending on what the land is and the water is contaminated with. So it's a very complex issue. It's part of the reason why it's taken us so long to really get some focused funding into that. But all the stars are aligning, Melissa.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. 549-2937, Dawn on the south side this morning. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Do you all remember the Superfund? And it was fought against vehemently by business, where none of the businesses would really take the blame. They would all just throw money in a pot, and it would be used for cleanup sites, you know, some worse than others in the country. And I've not heard word about Superfund. Is this an evolution of that?
Well, we actually do have a Superfund that is on our radar. The Eastside Environmental Council, which is a nonprofit located in the east side of Jacksonville, is actually providing some leadership with that in partnership with the EPA. That is the Kerr McGee site, and that is right over there in Talleyrand, not very far from where we are here in the studios of WJCT. And that particular company negotiated many parcels across the country. It is a multi-million, maybe even a billion-dollar lawsuit that they settled with the federal government. And Jacksonville is right in the mix of that. So there is some dollars from the lawsuit, from the settlement that is coming into Jacksonville. And that is really high on the radar right now. So that's another opportunity for us to do some cleanup.
And as you get to work, Groundwork Jacksonville wants to let people know about the Green Team as well. What's the Green Team?
This is one of those things where you wake up every morning and feel so good to come back into work. The Green Team is it's our youth development, our youth leadership development initiative. We have two tracks. We have a leadership camp, which is a competitive process. I have to say that it's modeled, you know, you mimic the things that are effective. And it's modeled after the Youth Leadership Jacksonville selection process. And so it's very competitive. It's highly regarded. It is an honor to be a part of our leadership camp. And this is our inaugural summer leadership. I'm happy to tell you that we have selected 10 children or youth, and they're between the ages of 14 and 18. They are representative of both Eastside and Springfield, equally in age, equally in somewhat of the gender and race, and it's just phenomenal. We also have a couple of children who are outside of Springfield and Eastside. However, they access an anchor, a major anchor in Springfield, which is Darnell Cookman. And so two students from Darnell Cookman are going to be a part of our inaugural leadership camp. We also do community service throughout the entire year. So, and we can have up to 25 to 30 children and youth to be a part of the Green Team. There are four buckets, and I think this is really important because this is not just a camp. This is a leadership camp, and we're looking at four things. Number one is that we want to build leadership traits. Number two, there is a STEM process. So we want to get the natural environment connected to the maths and sciences of the curriculum. Number three, neighborhood. Connect this all back into the neighborhood and how they can be ambassadors to improving and cleaning up brownfields and creating green space. And then finally, empathy. We know science says that children often develop empathy when they work with animals, right? But we know through the literature also that we can develop empathy through the natural environment. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to do with these leaders.
Fabulous. And it's always great to see you. Thanks for sharing all of this with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
She's Dawn Emmerich, CEO of Groundwork Jacksonville. And lots more still to come. Later, we're going to speak with Jaguars star Mercedes Lewis about his free summer football camp this weekend. Plus, Culpepper with a look at the excitement of the Triple Crown winner, the first in decades. But up next, what you need to know here in Florida as hurricane season gets underway. That's right after this.
Time is running out to voice your opinion about WJCT's weekend schedule. This summer, WJCT will introduce several new programs to our weekend lineup. We want your help deciding which new shows come to the First Coast. Help us decide what you hear on 89.9. Listen to the new programs and take the survey at wjct.org/weekends.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4, and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
Until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Afternoon keynote speaker Dinah Jordan's motivational messages ring loud and true about how we can make the choice to be happy, finding the funny in your life, taking responsibility for your own health, ways to bust stress, and in doing these four things can make a happier, healthier, more productive you. Good for You Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Welcome back. Well, hurricane season officially kicked off June 1st here in Florida. That's always something to keep your eye on. However, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is predicting a somewhat quieter than normal season this year with 6 to 11 named storms. Still, though, you got to be aware. What can we expect and how are response teams preparing around the city? We have two experts in studio now as we welcome Stephen Woodard, Director of Emergency Preparedness with Jacksonville Fire and Rescue. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Megan Graham, a planner with Emergency Preparedness. Good to see you.
Good morning.
And as we discuss hurricane season, here's your chance to connect with officials at 549-2937. Stephen, let's begin with you. Florida has been on a lucky streak. I almost want to knock on wood saying this. We haven't had a landfall hurricane in Florida in the last 10 years. Every year we hope that streak continues. But still, you are at the ready to make sure people stay safe this season. Tell us about your efforts this season.
You're exactly right. Each year we need to make sure that we are prepared as a community. And obviously, we've not experienced a major storm here in over 50 years with Hurricane Dora in 1964. But you're also noting that the National Weather Service is predicting perhaps a lower number of storms this year. But we remind people it only takes one. And we can go back to 1992 when there were seven storms, but the first storm was Hurricane Andrew that certainly devastated parts of Florida. So we do need to be prepared, and we each year produce a emergency preparedness guide that started distribution yesterday in the Times Union. We'll be distributing that guide to the community during the next few weeks, and hope that all your listeners take advantage of it and get a copy and follow a lot of the good advice that's included in that guide.
This is a great guide. It's free, a free insert. Jack's Ready, Megan. This is something every family in town should have to refer to in case we have any kind of weather-related emergency. Tell us about Jack's Ready.
Jack's Ready is our campaign for preparedness. You can log online to our website at jacksready.com. You can follow us on social media on Facebook and Twitter. You can also download our app to find out what evacuation zone you're in, what evacuation zone a family member is in, and all of our stuff is branded with the Jack's Ready guide. The guides will be available this year in Lowe's, Home Depot, ViStar, the libraries, the city buildings. You shouldn't have any problems finding the guide.
That's right. This will be everywhere, and you should pick this up. It's just a like a small newspaper, and there is a wealth of information in here from evacuation zone maps, shelter information, and much more. We also want to plug for a minute the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. In the case of a severe weather event or any emergency, 89.9 here, WJCT, will be the emergency response station of record to get information out to the public. So we're excited to partner with you on that.
And we're also very pleased to partner with WJCT. It's important that people know where they can get information on the radio or through social media when we do have an incident. The guide this year also does focus on evacuation zones. We had new zones that were established last year, and we have this year divided the city up into four quadrants so we could show down to the street level the evacuation zones so that the citizens can look in the guide and determine which zone they're in. They can also get that information through the Jax Ready mobile app that Megan mentioned.
Right. Download the mobile app, Jax Ready, and the seven tips, Megan, so important. Know your hazards. Put together a plan, build a disaster kit, learn your evacuation zone, know exactly what part of town you live in when it comes to flooding and storm surge risk. People need to study these maps.
We found in our public education events that when we ask citizens what evacuation zone they're in, they often make it up. And so that's one of the stresses for the guide this year as a result. And there's many tools to finding out what evacuation zone you're in.
Now, the app is a free app. But you can get it off your Play Store. Have people been downloading it?
We've had over 10,000 citizens download our app.
That's terrific. People can get that at a glance. And it's not just hurricanes you prepare for, Stephen. We're talking wildfires, flooding, tornadoes, storm surge, just a range of contingencies that Jax Fire and Rescue is looking at.
That's correct. We are a large community here with the city being over 870 square miles. So even this past weekend, we had some wildfire activity. We had a small tornado in April. We have thunderstorms, obviously, this time of year. Flooding is not unusual in the area, even with heavy rains. And certainly if we have a tropical storm or a hurricane, flooding is going to be an issue, along with storm surge. So it really is a preparedness guide, not just for hurricane season, but we encourage people to keep this guide and refer to it year-round because of some of the other threats that we do have in the area.
Anything else people need to know as they download Jax Ready?
If you're a special needs individual, the Jax Ready Guide actually has the special needs form in it this year, so you can cut it out and mail it right to us.
Good to know. So again, it's jaxready.com. Download the mobile app. As hurricane season kicks off June 1 and runs through November, hopefully our luck will continue this year, right, guys?
Certainly hope so.
And then they know, but always plan for the worst and hope for the best. That's what you're so good at, and we thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, that's jaxready.com. Look for the free guide all around town. Go to the website or download the mobile app. Just search Jax Ready. Get that on your phone and follow those seven steps in the event of severe weather. We were joined today by Stephen Woodard, director, and Megan Graham, planner with JFRD's Department of Emergency Preparedness. Again, that's jaxready.com. And up next, Jags tight end Mercedes Lewis calls into the show. It's a preview of his free football camp this weekend. Plus, Culpepper on the excitement of the first Triple Crown winner in nearly 40 years.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
In the classic 1951 film The African Queen, a small steamboat with the same name takes Katharine Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart on a dangerous journey as they confront German soldiers in World War I. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit Key Largo to take a ride aboard the African Queen. We'll discuss 18th century maps and Zora Neale Hurston's look at food. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT, 89.9 HD3. Learn more at WJCT.org/relax.
never know how much I love you.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and this Saturday, Jaguars tight end Mercedes Lewis is giving back to the community by sharing some of what the sport of football has given him. The Mercedes Lewis Foundation's second annual Jacksonville Football Camp will work to score some major touchdowns for kids at Lee High School. Now, this is a free opportunity for children to learn about football, the benefits of exercise and healthy living, and meet Mercedes and other former and current players. Really exciting. Mercedes Lewis is on the line now with a preview. And Mercedes Lewis, great to have you on the show. Good morning.
Hey, that was a great introduction. Good morning.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. Lots of excitement. You're going to conduct a free football camp at Lee High School this Saturday. Tell us about it. What's going to be happening?
Yeah, so I've been doing it for about 7 years out in California, where I'm from. And it's just an opportunity for me to give back. I always said that, you know, if I was ever on the platform to be able to give back, it'd be something that I'll be doing with no question because, you know, me growing up, I didn't necessarily have the luxury of, you know, past and present NFL players given a free camp. And I know that's, you know, one of the most important things because not all parents don't have, you know, the money to sponsor their kids and put them in camps. And I know, you know, a lot of guys make the kids pay, but that's not something that I believe in. So, you know, it's one of the things that my foundation does. We have a football camp for the kids to come out and not just come out and have fun and play football, but learn the importance of sportsmanship, healthy living. It's kind of like a human relations camp as well. You know, we have the police department, fire department come out, ROTC. I mean, so it's a great learning experience for the kids.
Yeah, and it's free, as you said. You're removing that barrier, the fee that so often is associated with this. You're also doing a camp in California, but this camp, Saturday at Lee High School on McDuff Avenue, is going to be such a great opportunity for kids. They need to go to your website to register, correct?
Yeah. So for more information about it, you can go to MercedesLewisFoundation.org or you can go to MercedesLewis.com. There are links right there on the front page, you know, just to learn more about the foundation,
sure.
More of the things that we do that my foundation puts on. We always try to create, you know, creative ways to raise money to give back to the kids. So it's just going to be a great opportunity on Saturday, and I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be excellent, and there are still some spots available. Again, it's MercedesLewisFoundation.org for this free camp. Mercedes Lewis, a pleasure. Have fun out there. Thanks for calling into the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, this is the second annual Mercedes Lewis Foundation football camp Saturday at Lee High School. This is free. So register your child. Go to MercedesLewisFoundation.org. This camp runs all day Saturday at Lee with Mercedes and other current and former NFL players. We'll be back in a moment with more sports as Culpepper talks about the thrilling Triple Crown winner.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Along the Southern California coast, oil from last month's spill is still washing up on beaches.
So right now you see a seagull, picking up a huge blob of oil, thinking that it's food.
A relatively small spill causing big problems for wildlife. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, for the first time since the Carter administration, we have a triple crown winner.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper is here now with a look at the thrilling finish in the Belmont Stakes, an American Pharoah. Wow, this was great.
It has been one of the stories that it's almost like thinking about how did we get this along without it. Well, yeah. We're probably never going to have one again. But for the first time since affirmed in 1978, there is a Triple Crown winner. There had been 12 horses to win the first two legs, but until Saturday when American Pharoah did it, no horse had been able to win all three of the biggest races. And that's exactly what American Pharoah did. So what does it all mean? Well, it if you're a horse racing person, you're thinking, hey, this is going to help launch horse racing back into a new golden age. I don't think that's probably going to happen.
Why not?
Well, I just think that there are too many other sports and options that are bigger. There have been too many, you know, there are too many other forces working against it. I do think we'll see a few more commercials featuring racehorses and especially featuring American Pharoah, at least for a little while. I think it allows horse racing to feel like it's significant on the American cultural landscape. Remember, once upon a time, it was boxing, baseball, and horse racing, right?
Yeah.
Those were it's been a long time since that was the case on the American sporting landscape, but there is still some magic in those Triple Crown races and the Breeders' Cup that even the casual sports fan and sometimes the non-sports fan will tune in just to watch those events.
Why do you think it's been almost 40 years for a horse to do this?
Well, some would say that the amount of money that has come into breeding horses has made for a deeper field, and it's, you know, there's more competition. Some say that specialization for certain track distances has come into play. The other thing that happens, though, is maybe a little more esoteric, because you'll have horses who run in the Kentucky Derby to say they ran in the Kentucky Derby. That puts their their stud fee up. Then they may not run the second leg if they don't do particularly well or if they didn't win, and they'll save themselves for the third leg. So now you've got horses that didn't run at the Preakness running at the Belmont. The Preakness sometimes will have a very small field. Back when Secretariat was running, the field would get smaller and smaller as it went on. Kentucky Derby had the biggest field, then the Preakness, then the Belmont, it would have a smaller field. So things have just changed in the sport, and you would think, though, with the amount of money that could potentially be there, that we would see some more dominant horses somewhere along the line.
Sure, sure. But in the meantime, it is exciting to see. As you said, even people that don't follow the sport were really thrilled by it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, when it's something that hasn't happened in 37 years, I mean, it's something to note for sure. To put that in context, by the way, the amount of time between Babe Ruth setting the home run record and Roger Maris breaking it was about that length of time.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's been a long time.
Cole Pepper always giving the informed perspective on these sports stories, which I love. Speaking of which, you want to tell us about another injured Jaguars rookie. That's terrible.
Yeah, first it was Dante Fowler Jr. who blew out his knee in the first hour of rookie minicamp. Now it's the fourth round pick, James Sample. The safety from Louisville broke his arm. But unlike Fowler, Sample should be back in time for at least some portion of training camp. However, his time off the field will certainly have him trailing the other rookies and young defensive backs. Jaguars back on the field today with their offseason practices. Next week it's minicamp, the last day of which is open to the public. You must register online at jaguars.com if you want to attend.
And people love doing that. They like to come out and see them play.
Yeah, and you know, with school out, a great chance for the kids to get out there and watch the Jaguars practice.
Absolutely. Now, Cole, of course, you're the face of the Jacksonville Armada. And they're getting nice buy-in from the public as they go through their season.
Really are. Over 7,500 fans yesterday at Community First Park. And we'll call it a half step forward for the Armada. You know, after losing 4-0 the previous week, the Armada drew 0-0 against Ottawa yesterday. One more match remaining in the spring season. That's on the road Saturday in New York against the first place New York Cosmos. There's still plenty of opportunities for the Armada to make the playoffs. It won't come as spring season champions. the Cosmos are close to wrapping up that honor, but that the Armada can either win the fall season, which begins in early July, or they can have one of the two best overall records, aside from the champions of the two halves, and still make the postseason. So a growing team, and certainly solved, it appears, some of the defensive issues that plagued them last week.
And for their first season out, it's been a really nice debut, wouldn't you say?
Fantastic. Second in the league in attendance. Not only what's happening on the field, you know, you drive around town, you see Armada stickers on cars and shirts and flags and so forth. I think aside from, you know, the NFL coming to Jacksonville, I think this has been the most successful debut for a new sports franchise in Jacksonville in my time in this town, which is now 19 years.
Wow, that's saying something.
Yeah.
Another franchise that's done well, the Sharks. I love this. As you always say, they did beat the hated Orlando Predators. I wish I could have been there for that. That must have been fun.
They used a, you know, the Orlando rivalry, I think, powers that a little bit, and it starts at the top with the ownership. But they get the win there, and they move into the top spot in the South Division. Sharks are back home next on June the 27th. It'll be the next opportunity. They go to Tampa this next week. Well, while the Suns are in Pensacola, part of a brief road trip, they're back home at the baseball grounds on Thursday, and that'll start a brief five-game set at the baseball ground. So you have all of the summer teams now in full swing with the Sharks, Suns, and Armada all, I guess you could say, filling in the time between now and football season.
Yeah, exactly. I guess sports fans think of it as sort of a dead zone on their calendar, but it really isn't.
No, there are more sporting events to go to outside of football season than in, if you think about it, because typically football season is once a week, and if you take college and pro, and let's say you're a Gator fan and a Jaguar fan, you get a Saturday and a Sunday, and then nothing else to attend until the next Saturday or Sunday. In this situation, you could have Sharks on Friday, Armada on Saturday, Suns on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what have you. So plenty of opportunities. Yeah, the powerboat races this weekend here on the river.
Oh, let's talk about that for a minute. Yeah. Now, that's going to be Saturday, right?
It was this past Saturday.
Oh, it was this past Saturday, sorry.
And Sunday, and had them down on the river to great success. And the big part of that, I think, is how it exposes Jacksonville to the rest of the world. And it's interesting, you know, as not to get too political here, but we'll see what the mayor-elect Lenny Curry's idea is in terms of putting sports as a platform piece for Jacksonville. That was a big part of Alvin Brown's approach, is to use sports to raise the profile of Jacksonville and try to attract big events that would attract attention and dollars to Jacksonville. And so the, you know, things like the powerboats and the NCAA tournament and so forth that came here certainly were big boons for Jacksonville.
Right, and the Jack Sports Council, one would assume, with the change over at City Hall, they'll still be engaged in doing their work.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, that's Alan Verlander and company will certainly be working in that direction as well. Part of it is going to be, I think, about how much does the city take hold of this? How much does Jack Sports take hold of this? I don't think we're going to take a step back in terms of the number and kind of events that are coming to Jacksonville. Of course, a lot of them will still center around football, but not all of them for sure, including, and this is one that you probably would not have predicted for Jacksonville, but we've talked about it before, the National Curling Championships are coming to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So that's going to be something to see when that rolls around.
I want to cross that off my bucket list. I will actually be able to watch that in person and say that I witnessed this sporting event.
That's in Florida, doesn't happen too often.
He's Cole Pepper, always here on Mondays. Follow him on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. This show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got questions or comments about the show, we always want to hear them. Send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And never miss a show. Our daily podcast is now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, an FDA panel recommends approval of the first drug to treat a lack of sexual desire in women. Some call that a step towards gender equality. Others are concerned about the pill's safety. A look at the risks and benefits of what's been dubbed Viagra for women. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.